Before I get started, let me just share a couple of books, or three books actually, with you. How many of you are familiar with Kat's book, Black Indians? You familiar? Do you have a copy? It is the primer of books on Black Indians. William Katz is not Native American, but he's been involved in writing about Native American, also mostly African American history since the 70s, even prior to that. And this gives a really good overview of the whole history. It's easily accessible, and it's a book that I would recommend for you to have if you're interested in your library. The other item is Black Indians, an American Story. And it's the first videotape that I've known to talk about the issues of Black Indians. James Earl Jones does the introduction, and if James Earl Jones says it, it must be true. The Neville brothers, who are Cherokee, play the, are the musicians on the tape. It was done by a Cherokee man who had heard all of his life about African-American, Native American people, and so I think he did this probably 10 years ago, and it's won awards. Then, of course, I have to direct you to my book, The Red-Black Connection, and it has narratives of contemporary people and photographs. Some people from Northern California, Southern California, from Missouri, Oklahoma, and the Dartmouth area. So we're beginning to get a lot of information in print form for people who are interested in finding out more about that history. Are we rolling? Okay. So let's get started. Hi, welcome. Do you want to sit in the center? Before you do, would you pick up a test over there and answer that before we get further into it? So we'll give her a minute. And if during this discussion, this presentation, you have some questions that are pertinent to that particular point being made, feel free to raise your hand or shout out and say, well, you know, I have a question about that because that's not my understanding, or please clarify. So, we'll get started. I want to thank you for coming. I know weekdays can be difficult with traffic. What do these people have in common? Crispus Attucks, Frederick Douglass, Paul Robeson, Alice Walker, Jesse Jackson, Tina Turner, James Earl Jones, the Neville Brothers, Charlie Pride, and LL Cool J. They are all Americans of African American Indian descent. The lives of African and Native Americans have been intricately intertwined for at least 500 years. The relationship has been one of rescue, mutual assistance, and sometimes abuse and strife. We're going to take a look at this long history and the contemporary issues faced by the resulting population, like many of us, of African Native Americans in the United States. So how did red people evolve? The American Negro that evolved in the South is more than a transplanted African, primarily due to the influence of mixtures with Europeans and with Native Americans. A random survey conducted in 1974 that revealed that 70% of blacks were estimated to have physical characteristics of Indian ancestry. And when I started doing research for my book and going to powwows and looking at people, I had a revelation. Before, when I looked out at a group of African Americans, I said, well, there's that European influence. But I came to understand that what I was also seeing was that Native American influence as well. While there is evidence to suggest that Africans made contact with the Western Hemisphere and Indians before Columbus, we are going to start with the year 1492 and documentation from that time. And let me just go back a little bit. I've made this presentation in different forms at different places, colleges and universities and genealogical sites. And every time I do, I tweak it just a little bit. And I've come to understand there's language that we need to clean up, one which is slaves. And Africans and Native Americans were not just slaves, they were enslaved people, enslaved Indians. And reframing that gives us a different point of view, I think, and helps us to understand the humanity that was perhaps washed out by simply using the term slaves. The second one is the New World. And obviously people have been living here for thousands and thousands of years, so it was not a new world to them. They were here, so I've changed when I can to say the Western Hemisphere or the Americas. And there's a third term, and I've got it right now. I'm sure it will come up later. At the time of Columbus's arrival, and not discovery, there were estimated 80 million Indians in the Americas, in the Western Hemisphere. Columbus kidnapped a total of 1,000 Indians during his voyages, and over time the Spanish kidnapped a total of 6,000. They were transported to Seville, the center of the Spanish slave trade. Some were put to work in the silver mines, while others were dispersed through Europe as laborers and domestics. So if we did a DNA test in Europe, we might find that indeed there were people there who had native ancestry as well. Portugal, another major slave center, transported 50,000 Indian slaves to Europe. Most of the Indians in the mines died by the age of 26. The mine conditions were difficult at best, and so very different from the experiences that they had in their homeland. It was this high death rate that prompted Spanish slave traders to petition for the increase in African slavery. This slave trade was very extensive. In fact, more Africans crossed the Atlantic to the Western Hemisphere than did European colonists. Almost everywhere the Spanish went, they were accompanied by Africans, both free and slave. They served mostly as crew members and laborers, but sometimes as missionaries and explorers. In 1502, the first Spanish slave traders landed on the southeast coast of what is now Florida. Southeastern coast. Several slaves jumped ship and fled to the woods in the protection of the resident Indians. Now, when different groups come together, there are two things that happen. First, there's an exchange of culture and of ideas. And secondly, there is intermixing. Despite class, culture, color, and custom, the proximity of Africans and Indians resulted in the development of red black people. In 1520, another crew of African slaves escaped off the coast of South Carolina, and the Indians were very receptive to the fleeing slaves. They were angry. After all, they had already been benefited by the kidnapping of their own people as well. And they were angry about an early kidnapping of 70 members. So the Indians did not make a distinction between themselves and the Africans who lived among them. Indians often intermarried with friendly tribes in the region and were not concerned with the issue of blood or quantum. And blood and quantum are new concepts that we began to hear in the late 1800s. The stigma of color was to rear its ugly head under the influence of the British. The Africans remained with the Indians when the Spanish ship left the area 5 months later. It was this group that established the first foreign settlement in the United States near the mouth of the PD River in South Carolina. An annual festival at this site celebrates the memory of this settlement. What were the characteristics that Indians and Africans shared? First and foremost, they had a common foe, the Europeans. It was a classic case of the enemy of my enemy is my friend. Africans knew that the person who uprooted him also uprooted the Indians, so they had to establish relationship with their Indian host, independent of the white man. Indians realized that Africans knew European strategies and could provide information that would be helpful to the Indians. Africans realized Indians knew the land and how to survive on it. In addition, Africans often served as translators between the European and the Indian population. Indians and Africans shared sensibilities based upon common beliefs, reverence for nature, life, family, religion, economic cooperation, and concern about ancestors. Patterns of basket weaving, pottery, storytelling, conjuring and charms, burning dugout canoes and dances were also very important. In fact, there had been some reference to a basket that had old world monkeys on it that were found among Indian ruins, so that there was some connection there, some translation of culture from African American culture African culture, actually, into Indian cultures. Much of contemporary African-American food and folk medicine can be traced to the Indians. For example, the fillet used in gumbo is a Choctaw spice. In another exchange, Indian stories that make reference to monkeys, elephants, gorillas, can be traced to African roots. There was a merge of language as words from one culture filtered into the other. On the negative side of the ledger, both Indians and Africans suffered greatly from the burdens of slavery, oppression, loss of land, erosion of traditions and customs. By the year end of the 1500s, only 10 million Indians were left in the hemisphere, the rest having been enslaved and shipped off, killed by European disease or harsh treatment, or were outright murdered. So we've got the Spanish in Florida, and they're doing their thing. Then the British come, and the British word, Johnny's come lately, and it always perplexes me when we make a reference to influences in the United States, that we tend to omit the Spanish and concentrate so much on Jamestown in 1619. They started the Jamestown village with the importation of indentured servants, and these indentured servants were European and also Africans. Now, the indentured servants worked their passage off for 12 years, and then they were free to seek their future, their fortune in colonies. Both groups worked as fishermen alongside Indians from the region. So there was a whole combination of people interacting and working together, and that proximity resulted in the mix that we see on the East Coast a lot. There was ample opportunity for contact between Africans, Indians, and Europeans, in part due to the gentle terrain. This was not so in the southern and South America, because you've got a much more rugged terrain, and you also have the dense jungles there. African Indian unions were found on Indian reservations and living among the colonists, especially along the eastern seaboard. On the coast, Indian women who lost their fishermen husbands at sea often married Africans. There were 100,000 Afro-Indians by the mid-1600s, some with white blood. British slavery of Indians and Africans began in 1661. And since most North American slave owners brought slaves from the West Indies or South America, it has been suggested that these Negroes were already very thoroughly mixed with Indians of the islands and of the mainland of Brazil by the time most of them were brought to North America. Indians were enslaved for 12 years, while Africans were enslaved for life. The sale of Indians into slavery became a major source of income for the British. Captives were sold into West Indies, Spain, and along the Mediterranean coast. It did not take long for the Indians to adapt to European dress, tools, and especially religion, and by 1670, the erosion of the Indian culture had begun. The British preferred Africans to the Indians, even though they cost twice as much. The Africans were far from home and withstood European diseases better. The mainland Indians were frequently deported to the West Indies or even exchanged for Africans. So we've got a tremendously complex shift of people from one location to another. And in terms of treatment, the slave owner, and this is where I deleted the term master, and I've changed that to slave owner, made little distinction between the two groups. Plantations and slave quarters presented the best opportunity for the mingling of Africans and Indians. Remember that concept, proximity. And we can see the term proximity operating in our culture today as our cultures and groups begin to blend more and more. Almost two-thirds of the enslaved Africans were male. The enslaved Indians were mostly female, since the men were usually killed or shipped off. Odds were that in the mixing of the two groups, the husband was African with an Indian wife, and often when an Indian woman married an African slave, she assumed that she herself became black. So for those of you who are working in genealogy, it becomes very difficult sometimes to pin down the ethnicity of that population because of these shifts in perspective and also shifts in the census taking and how that's been conducted. So-called Christian names were given to both groups, and it was often hard to distinguish Indian slaves from African slaves. Indians were sometimes listed on slave rolls as Negroes or mulattoes. Other written reports created confusion so that an undetermined number of full-blood or mixed-blood Indians were characterized as Negroes, adding more confusion to the mix of tracing our ancestors. At the beginning of the 1700s, a huge portion of colonial slaves was in South Carolina. In fact, slaves outnumbered the Europeans, and Indians were more than half of this slave population. Slave owners were particularly cruel in this region due to the large number of slaves and the threat of slave revolts. In 1738, Africans fleeing British slavery sought refuge with Creeks in Georgia and the Spanish in Florida. They came to be called Maroons, from the Spanish word Cimarron. Some of the Creeks broke away to Florida and settled close to the Africans, who intermarried with them. These Creeks came to be known as Seminoles, from the Creek word for runaways. Florida became a Spanish buffer protected by Indian and African warriors. So we have this conflict between this whole European empires trying to capture new land in the Western Hemisphere. So Spain was cheek to jaw with England, and there were some problems as a result of that. So the Indian-African warriors and Afro-Indian warriors created an alliance that might have threatened Georgia plantations. So the British wanted to annex Florida, but the slave fugitives built a fort in St. Augustine, which is 1,000 years old now, to protect the region. This is the oldest European settlement in the United States. What caused some groups of Indians to develop institutional slavery? Slavery was not new in the Americas. Many Indian nations captured slaves as a result of intertribal wars or raids. But this slavery was not institutional slavery as developed by the encroaching foreign powers. Indian slaves were often adopted or allowed to marry into the family. This served to increase the population and the power of the tribe. It was under the influence of the British that the Indians at the colony borders became slave owners in the matter of the colonists. The Indians on the borders were the Choctaw, Creeks, Chickasaw, Cherokee, and the Seminole. They presented a problem to the slave owners because runaway slaves would seek refuge with them. The British theorized that if the Indians accepted slavery, then the slaves would not be able to find comfort there and not take in those slaves. Thus, in the mid-1700s, slavery and its attitudes were introduced to these groups. They were called the Five Civilized Tribes precisely because of their adaptation to British customs, particularly the tradition of slavery. And how many of you can trace or have oral history that talks about the Five Civilized Tribes? So that is where much of that influence comes from. There were some differences, however, in how Indian slave owners treated their African and red black slaves. The Choctaw took to slavery easily. The Chickasaws and the Cherokee often allowed slaves to marry into and become members of the tribe. Africans among the Seminoles lived in almost complete freedom, not unlike the status of sharecroppers. While the sentiment is that Indian slave owners were far less oppressive than the whites in the colonies, this was not necessarily the case. In reality, the majority of slave owners within the Indian nations were white or white mixed bloods. We could call them white Indians. They were often men who had married into the tribes in order to gain land. Because of their white heritage, they felt superior to the full bloods. Colonial slave owners put pressure on Indian slaves to be more controlling and more oppressive. Here is what Sarah Wilson had to say during an interview of former slaves in the early 20th century. "I was a Cherokee slave, and now I am a Cherokee freedwoman, and besides that, I am a quarter Cherokee my own self. My pa was old Master Ben's boy, Ned Johnson. Old Master Ben come from Tennessee. He was a white man that married a Cherokee woman, and he was a devil on this earth. He liked to take the men to see a hanging to scare them. But my old Uncle Nick was a bad Negro, and he said, I ain't afraid of him, referring to the hanged men, nor nothing else in this world. And old Master beat him with a rope, and then when he got home, he tied old Nick to a tree and poured the cat of nine tails to him until he fainted away and fell over like he was dead. Old Uncle Nick liked to run away to the north, just like lots of men did. I carry scars on my legs to this day where old master whipped me for lying with a raw hide whip he'd carried all the time for his horse. Old master wasn't the only hellion. Old mistress was just as bad, and she took most of her wrath out hitting us children all the time. It was a long time after master knew that the war was over and we was free before he told us. It near killed him to let us loose. I got married, and him and me, we got our land on our Cherokee freedman blood. A contemporary Chickasaw woman tells another view of pre-Civil War relations. Her great-grandmother, Rebecca, was a 17-year-old slave. She had a 3-year-old daughter, the result of rape by her master. Rebecca met a handsome Chickasaw man, Spencer, and fell in love with him. He would visit and court her at the plantation. When the master would not allow them to marry, Spencer, under cover of night, whisked Rebecca and her daughter away to his village. She was made welcome there, and when the slave master came looking for her, the entire village caused him to stand down. Spencer and Rebecca were married in 1852 and raised 5 children on the reservation. Spencer later joined the Union Army and was killed in battle. Because she was black and not an Indian, Rebecca was denied the homestead of 160 acres of land due to widows of Indian veterans. Aline says this about her ancestor: "I will always be grateful to Spencer for rescuing my great-grandmother from slavery." And slavery was not only harmful to the African slaves, but also to the Indian slave owners. It divided each nation into a slave-owning, wealthy minority and a poor majority. And about 15% of the Indians were slave owners, as compared to about 25% of whites. It altered basic economics from hunting and fishing to tilling large plantations for cash crops. Finally, race and color became important in judging people. So what was going on at the time of the Revolution? Just prior to the American Revolution in 1769, Spain ended Indian slavery in Louisiana, but owners simply reclassified their Indian slaves as black so they could keep them enslaved. About this time, the English outlawed the slave trade, but not the institution. Slavery by that time was confined to Africans and those black Indians already enslaved, a total of 1 million people. African slavery had primarily replaced Indian slavery, and the institution changed in that the term slave became synonymous with black or African. The colonial leaders remained hostile towards Africans and Indians, enslaving one group, waging war on the other. Founding Father Thomas Jefferson, a slave owner, and also about his history with his children, said this about Indians: "We will not stop pursuing them with war while one remains on the face of the earth." Then in later years, racist colonial powers employed the rule of divide and conquer, which often created a breach between Africans and Indians. Africans were used to battle resisted tribes. Indians were recruited to hunt and capture fugitive slaves. Moving on into the 1800s. By the turn of the 19th century, Indians east of the Mississippi had become a biracial people with a sprinkling of white blood. Indians on Martha's Vineyard and on Cape Cod and the Pequot, for example, were highly mixed with African blood. Slave owners felt the presence of Indian communities on their borders that included black members spelled possible sabotage, subversion, and a haven for slave runaways, and they were absolutely right. For example, the Shinnecock Indians, who were also a mixed population, and Portuguese fishermen together served as conductors on the Underground Railroad. And one writer theorizes that the trails of the railroad used for the transport of slaves seeking freedom were originally Indian trails. Laws were put into place to attempt to restrict mixed marriages. Mixed Indian groups were declared no longer Indian, and Thomas Jefferson took federal recognition away from some tribes because, quote, they had become more black than red, unquote. And many of you may know the Pequots because of their fabulous casino, which has a $21 million museum, and they spent millions of dollars and scores of years to document the fact that they did exist as a tribe so they could get federal recognition and have that relationship with the federal government. By the mid-1800s, there were 4 million African and red black slaves. Andrew Jackson boasted of his Indian fighting, and it was his expansionist policies that led to the Indian Removal Act of 1830. This act called for the mass deportation of Indians, those same so-called 5 civilized tribes. They were to be removed from their homelands into what was called, ironically, Indian territory. The territory was to be theirs forever. 60,000 Indians and their slaves were relocated into what is now Oklahoma.